Elissa Walker Campbell delivers sports the way you want it. Big names, bold interviews, beyond the X's and O's. Think big. The Big E Sports Show.
Elissa Walker Campbell, we want to welcome you back this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. And you know, with Oregon headed to their first BCS National Championship game, hey, we wanted to catch you up with sports writer and author Brian Libby, who covers the Ducks on a regular basis. In fact, he has written several books about the program. Brian, it's so great to have you on. You know, I'm quite certain there was a lot of celebrating, a lot of high fives going on after that 17-point win on the road in Corvallis last Saturday afternoon.
Yes, yes. Thanks for having me on the show, first of all. And I can tell you, I learned for the first time in my life what it's like to have a champagne poured over your head. And I can tell you, it feels awesome.
Talk about as far as that particular matchup, because I think the score, although the Ducks, you know, walked away with a 17-point win, the score was a little bit deceptive because you guys really had to grind it out for three quarters.
Yeah. Although that's actually part of a larger pattern that the Ducks have been part of this year. Even though they've gone 12-0, most all of their games have been fairly competitive in the first half, and I think it has to do with the type of offense they run in that Oregon has had its success kind of later in the second half when a key factor seems to emerge, which is getting the opponents tired. Oregon has this offense they run that is pretty innovative, if nothing else, just in how quickly they hike the ball. And through just a ton of games, almost every game practically this season, there was an oddly similar pattern in that, you know, it's kind of like a boxer that's, you know, you're exchanging jabs for the few early rounds, and then all of a sudden these uppercuts and haymakers start coming in the later rounds. And that's kind of the way Oregon has been this year.
Well, we certainly want to talk about that offense. I mean, because it exhausts its opponents. There's no doubt about that. I believe, you know, I'd seen the stat, what in the first four games, the Ducks were actually averaging a point per minute. I mean, that is unheard of in college football.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible. And granted, you know, to be fair, a couple of those early opponents were kind of patsies, New Mexico and Portland State. But then Oregon did go into Neyland Stadium and do that to Tennessee before over 100,000 people. And I know Tennessee wasn't, you know, necessarily a marquee program this year. But, yeah, that early season, especially, the team was having just an unprecedented amount of offensive success. It reminds me of some of those teams a person sees over the years in college or pro where they have, maybe you're not rooting for that team in particular, but you see this kind of special offense scoring points that is just fun to watch. I think of like the Rams of the NFL when they had Kurt Warner.
Yes.
Or the San Diego Chargers in the late 70s and 80s with the Air Coryell teams. You know, just it's really fun, I think, to watch a team that scores a lot of points.
We are zeroing in on the BCS National Championship game. In the spotlight this week is the Oregon Ducks, and Brian Libby is joining us. He is a sports writer and author. In fact, he's been on our show before. We have highlighted and previewed some of his books, Tales from the Oregon Ducks Sideline. He also produced another book, Oregon Football Vault, and we'll be hearing about some of the other projects Brian has going on. Talk to us about this 2010 season, though, for the Ducks, because it has been a remarkable year, an incredible run, and I think that you have to factor in, you know, you guys lost your starting veteran quarterback in Jeremiah Masoli last year, and he led the Ducks to the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, it's really been incredible. Both last season and this season, the two seasons that Chip Kelly has been head coach, have really been this story of dark times at the beginning that have led to more success than people were expecting. Of course, last season began with that kind of nationally famous punch thrown by Oregon's LeGarrette Blount.
How can we forget?
State game. And so, you know, that was looking really terrible. We started 0-1 and then ended up going to the Rose Bowl. And then, like you say, this year we began the year losing our starting quarterback, Jeremiah Masoli. He was arrested for a theft at a fraternity. It sounded just like a stupid kid's prank, but, you know, you've got to be careful when you're, you know, a famous college athlete. You've got to not make stupid mistakes. And so he was kicked off the team. And I don't think Oregon fans saw a 12-0 season coming on the heels of losing their starting quarterback, but that's precisely what happened. I think Oregon ended up having some kind of dumb luck that people weren't expecting going from Masoli to the current starting quarterback, Darren Thomas, in that Oregon's spread offense is kind of like West Virginia of a couple of years ago when they were rolling, in that it's a spread offense that starts first with the running game. And Jeremiah Masoli last year was more of a running quarterback than a throwing quarterback, so that made us really a running spread-oriented offense. But this year, the starter at quarterback, Darren Thomas, is more of a pure passer. He can also run, but he's a better passer than Jeremiah Masoli was. And so we've got a little bit more balance to the game now, and that has helped just kind of ratchet it up. And I think the other thing is just the kind of conditioning and players buying into Chip Kelly's plan of this sort of innovative way of playing offense, of hiking the ball within about 10 or 15 seconds of the end of the last play.
Can you talk some more about what the Ducks do offensively? Because it is just amazing to think about, you know, a sophomore quarterback, Darren Thomas, how he just, you know, secured the position, but he was the perfect fit and how he was able to rack up such huge yards and offense. I mean, he threw 33 touchdowns this year.
Yeah, it's really incredible. There was a moment 2 years ago when Oregon was playing Boise State at home and was down to their fifth-string quarterback, and that ended up being Darren Thomas 2 years ago. And Oregon fans got this little taste of Thomas in that game. Boise State had been leading at Oregon something like 37-10, and Darren Thomas was a true freshman who came in the fourth quarter of that game and rallied Oregon back to what ended up being a final score of 37-32. Oregon still lost the game, but just the fact that Darren Thomas came in as a freshman and was slinging it 2 years ago against Boise State made us really kind of hopeful for the future. And we thought the future would come maybe in another year after Masoli had graduated, but it all just got moved up quickly. And people were happy to see that that Boise State game 2 years ago was an accurate harbinger of things to come, and that Thomas can really, again, kind of sling it. And he's a good passer. He can run, too, and that's very important in the spread. I mean, the spread offense, of course, is all about getting players isolated in space, kind of speedy players getting isolated in space. And, you know, just by its very definition, the spread is about spreading out the field and making the defense spread out as much more than they want to be. And so when you have a running quarterback in the spread, that is like what becomes the thing that makes it all happen, because there are these defenders all over the field, and yet there's nobody left to guard the quarterback. And so he can just, you know, go out for a pass, and then nobody's open, and he starts running. But the defense, of course, just like in any offense, has to first respect the pass in order for a quarterback running it to work out.
Brian, you say speedy players, one of the speedy players for Darren Thomas. I mean, it makes your job so much easier when you have got a target and a running back like LaMichael James. He is truly something special, and no surprise, he's been in contention all season long with the Heisman.
Yeah, it's been incredible. Oregon has had some good running backs over the years. They had, for example, Ahmad Rashad, who most people know as a broadcaster now, but in the 70s was going into the NFL draft. He, after he graduated from Oregon, he was both the number one running back prospect and the number one receiver prospect. And then we've had some other backs over the years, like Reuben Drones or Jonathan Stewart, who's with the Panthers now. But LaMichael James might be the best Oregon running back of all time. He's a little bit small for the NFL, but he's got, like you say, incredible speed and shiftiness. And it's looking like he's going to be the Heisman runner-up. And given that Cam Newton will probably win the Heisman, I almost wonder if the trophy could become LaMichael James by default down the road.
I was going to ask you that too, Brian. That's a great question, you know, in terms of what is the pulse of Duck Nation, the fact that Cam Newton, he was reinstated so quickly. And as you said, you know, LaMichael James, here he could be a runner-up, and perhaps, you know, he'll never get that opportunity.
Yeah, it's really disappointing in a certain respect, but I think Oregon fans are taking it well, because we're all just sort of in this disbelief right now, or floating through the air on cloud nine, that we've had an undefeated season, the first time since 1895, our first season of play. If not for the fact that Oregon fans were so deliriously happy and distracted about just the fate of the team itself,
yeah,
I think there would be a sense of injustice there. You know, we're in the same conference with USC, so we've already seen Reggie Bush go through this with his Heisman Trophy being stripped and USC's title being stripped, I believe. I don't want to convict someone prematurely, and Cam Newton deserves to be considered innocent before he's proven guilty, but there's a lot of circumstantial evidence showing that there may have been some funny stuff going on. Especially when we've just been through the Reggie Bush experience, and I say we as sort of college football fans and players in the college football world, we've just experienced that with Reggie Bush. And while, again, nobody wants to convict Cam Newton before he's had a fair chance to prove his good name, it certainly seems fishy And so, like you say, LaMichael James could be getting kind of almost morally screwed out of a Heisman Trophy because of it.
The Oregon Ducks are 12-0. They are in the national title game, and we are alongside Brian Libby, sports writer, author, talking about his favorite team. And, you know, just a moment ago, you were highlighting some of the former players that have been a part of this program. Ahmad Rashad, I also think of, you know, Dan Fouts. Give us a little bit, Brian, of a history lesson. You have covered this team throughout the years. I mean, Oregon, they were, I don't like to say a national doormat in the 70s, but this was a program that really has had its struggles.
Yes, yes. It's had some moments of both great times and some real difficulty. As you alluded to, the 70s were probably the worst time. Just a lot of kind of 1-9 and 2-8 or 3-7 seasons. The worst would probably be 2 years in the mid-1970s that I remember. Oregon began the 1974 season losing to Nebraska 61-7, and then the very next year began the year losing to Oklahoma 62-7. And so, you know, as an Oregon fan, if you remember those days, any sports fan, when you support a team that's been through some tough times, it makes the good times all the more something to savor. Oregon, having said that, though, again, has had some moments and some individual players that are pretty impressive. There are actually only about five or six other college football teams that have more players in the Pro Football Hall of Fame than Oregon does at six. One of those players would be Mel Renfro, for example, who is a Pro Football Hall of Famer.
Dallas Cowboys, yes.
The Dallas Cowboys and a kick returner. And you've got quarterback Norm Van Brocklin, who was the starting quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles' last NFL championship-winning team in 1960. And Van Brocklin, a quarterback, also was another one famous for an offensive explosion. The Los Angeles Rams of the 60s were kind of another one of those teams like Kurt Warner's Rams or Eric Coryell's Chargers, who were just an explosive offense with Van Brocklin and Elroy Crazy Legs Hirsch. More recently, you've had, Oregon's most successful player before this year was probably Joey Harrington in the 2001 Ducks. They won the Fiesta Bowl over Colorado. And that was a year where Oregon, at least in Oregon's fans' minds, was kept unfairly out of the national championship game. People may remember that year in 2001. Miami was clearly the number one team, and they did go on to win the national championship. But that game, the championship game, was against Nebraska, even though Oregon had been ranked number two in both the AP and the coaches' poll going into the bowl season, but Nebraska was chosen instead. Nebraska that year hadn't even won its conference championship game. They had been trounced by Colorado, but they ended up going to the title game against Miami instead. So, again, there have been some high highs and low lows for Oregon, and I think it's a team, you know, everybody has their own team, but I think a lot of college football fans can identify out there where, you know, most teams out there are not like an Oklahoma or Texas or Notre Dame or USC where it's just year in, year out success. Most teams have a little taste of both, and I think that's Oregon's case.
I want to give you a plug for some of the work that you've done because you do chronicle many of these athletes and stories in the book Tales from the Oregon Ducks Sideline. I think you're going to be re-releasing, or what are you going to be doing with your new project?
Well, I'm looking to have an updated version of the book come out, Tales from the Oregon Ducks Sideline. Originally, it went through the 2006 season, and the last 4 years have obviously been pretty fruitful, going 12-0 this year, and then the Rose Bowl last year, and we had won the Holiday Bowl the year before that. When I wrote the book in 07, I always wanted to just keep updating it because they keep playing, of course, and so that's on the horizon next, I think.
Well, we have hit on and talked about just the amazing job that Chip Kelly has done with this team. He's only in his second season, but how different is he from Mike Bellotti? Because he seemed more like the charismatic CEO type, whereas Coach Kelly, he's pretty intense. He's an X's and O's guy.
Yeah, I think you've hit it pretty accurately there. Mike Bellotti was one of those coaches who let the assistants do their job and wasn't necessarily a micromanager. He, again, was, like you say, kind of like a CEO. He was good at leading the program, and obviously he did something right as a coach as well. He wasn't just standing around. Mike Bellotti is Oregon's all-time winningest coach, but Chip Kelly came in first for 2 years as Mike Bellotti's assistant, and then the last 2 years as head coach, and he is just something really interesting and special. You get the sense of a guy who waited a lot longer than most coaches do to become the head of a program.
Yeah.
You kind of get this sense that he was making a long list of all these things he wanted to do when he got the chance to be head coach. And he's really approached every facet of the game, not just on Saturdays, but especially in practice, too, with a spirit of innovation. And granted, Chip Kelly is not as good with sound bites or on TV as Mike Bellotti might have been. I mean, Bellotti is now an ESPN commentator, and I doubt that will ever be the case for Chip Kelly. But I think Chip Kelly is one of those people who's pulling all-night video sessions and you know, probably has some kind of chalkboard or whiteboard in his living room at home. But it's just been really successful. I mean, if you can imagine a situation where you have a coach that is coaching your team for 15 years and is your all-time leading coach in victories, and then some new guy comes along who's never even been a head coach before and makes you almost instantly forget about your all-time winningest coach. I mean, I think Bellotti, you know, 2 years ago would have had a special reverence from Oregon fans, and it's not that that doesn't exist now, but I think Oregon fans, it's been pretty surprising how they have seen in Chip Kelly probably the most talented coach Oregon has ever had.
What is Chip Kelly? What is he like at practice? Because, you know, even watching on the BCS title show, I've never interviewed him, but he just seems like he has that steadfast mind, unrelenting focus, and he's all business. And as you said, he's not your soundbite kind of a guy, not one to maybe give those interviews.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, to say he is not a soundbite guy doesn't necessarily mean that he isn't a motivator. I think he's getting in players' face masks on the practice field and is a little more intense with them than a Bellotti had been. And maybe that's why you're seeing Oregon take a step up, even though, you know, without taking anything away from Bellotti again, who took them to a Fiesta Bowl title and really escalated the program. At the same time, I think people can see that there's an intensity and a focus and an attention to detail that the team has now that it didn't have under Bellotti. And there's also, to be fair, there's been an evolution in the types of recruits that the team has been able to get. You know, I saw a lot of Oregon Duck games in the 1980s sitting in Autzen Stadium when they were, you know, happy to be 6-5. And the sense you'd get then was that actually they would have a fairly talented starting 22 players, but then as soon as an injury came along, there was just no depth to deal with anything. There was one year in the late 80s, I believe, when Bill Musgrave was the quarterback, and Oregon was 6-1 and about to face quarterback Troy Aikman and UCLA for the conference lead, and Oregon's quarterback got injured, and they went from 6-1 to 6-6. Whereas today, if Oregon has injuries, I think they've escalated as a program enough that there's a lot of depth there, and they wouldn't necessarily fold so quickly.
Glad you're with us this weekend on the Big East Sports Show. I'm your host, Elissa Walker-Campbell. We want to pause and direct you to our radio website. That is eradiosports.com, and we thank all of our many sponsors. We're going to point out and encourage you guys to check out our premier sponsor, that is the friends and folks at Western Company of Texas. You can go to wct.us.com. We are talking Oregon football with Brian Libby, sports writer and author. And tell us some more about Coach Kelly. I mean, recruiting-wise, where does he get a majority of his recruits?
Well, that's been expanded as well, and again, it's only fair that some of the credit goes to the rest of the program as well. But having said that, Chip Kelly, while he may not be charismatic, he's probably in some ways more ambitious than Mike Bellotti was when it comes to something like recruiting. I mean, we have a 4-star rated quarterback from the state of Florida coming in next year, and that would have been absolutely unheard of even just a few years ago. And the team is aspiring to be a kind of national power that can recruit in Florida and Texas and Pennsylvania. You know, Terrell Pryor, the Ohio State quarterback, almost came to Oregon 2 years ago, and people were kind of shocked, I think, that Oregon was in the running with Ohio State and Penn State at the time. And so things have really changed. I mean, Oregon fans are really pinching themselves. And I know you must have a lot of readers out there who are listening to this in places like Texas or the Midwest and saying, Oregon, you know, they're not a national power. They're not USC. And to a large extent, they're right. But I think Oregon can be an inspiration to a lot of college football teams out there that it is possible. I think it's easy to get cynical in college football sometimes, or any sport, when you just see the same old teams winning year after year, you know, Michigan and Ohio State and Notre Dame and Alabama and USC. Usually one of those teams is right around the top. Obviously Texas, Oklahoma, And so when you're talking about a team like Oregon or maybe a TCU or a Wisconsin, I think people, even if they're not fans of that particular program, can appreciate the fact that it's something kind of special when a team that hasn't always been part of royalty is able to stand up there on the national stage and perform. You know, as an Oregon fan, obviously it would be the dream of a lifetime if Oregon were to win that national championship against Auburn. But at the same time, I think if your team goes 12-0 and has unprecedented new success like this, you want to just sort of pinch yourself and stop and appreciate it along the way.
Well, Oregon, of course, is in that national stage. They will be taking on Auburn. But also, next year, let's look ahead. They're going to be playing LSU in the season opener at the Cowboys Stadium next year. That's going to be a big game, and for all of us folks here in Dallas-Fort Worth.
Yeah, I think that'll be a great opportunity for people in Texas to get a sense of Oregon and that style of play. Obviously, you know, the SEC is the top conference in college football, and the Big 12 and Big 10 are right there as well. But I would argue that the Pac-10 is one of those kind of premier conferences along with the other three. And even though the spread offense is something new to college football and LSU runs it as well as Oregon, at the same time, I think there's always been a bit of a dichotomy in football, particularly in college, in that the Eastern and Southern teams, maybe the Midwest teams, can be a little bit more about strength and brawn, and West Coast teams are more about speed. And so it's always interesting to see that kind of matchup. You know, when Oregon and LSU get together in Cowboys Stadium next year, there will be, among other kinds of matchups, brawn against speed, and that should be interesting to see.
Okay, as we get ready to wrap up this weekend's interview, you guys got about, 5 weeks of prep before the big game. What do you think is going to be the key for Oregon to come away with a win?
Prayer, maybe.
Hail Mary. I'm not Catholic, but I'll throw one out for you.
I think, it would be a cliche to say you can't stop Cam Newton, you only hope to contain him, but there is an element of truth to that. I think both teams, both Auburn and Oregon, have shown themselves to be second-half teams this year for the most part, so it'll be interesting to see who comes away successfully there. Oregon is still thinking about the egg they laid in the Rose Bowl last year against Ohio State. Not that they played a terrible game, but Oregon came away feeling they should have won that game. And so I know that Chip Kelly is really going to be hitting the books hard and the videotapes hard, and I think Oregon fans are trustworthy that he's going to have a good game plan, but it will be a really interesting test to see if a team from the Pacific Northwest can really handle a powerhouse from the SEC and one of the best quarterbacks we've seen in college football in years. I mean, people were talking about Tim Tebow that way a couple of years ago, but if you forget about Cam Newton's off-the-field questions, he really is a stunning specimen of a college football player.
He truly is. He's an incredible athlete, no doubt about that. A number of storylines that will lead up to that national title game, but I got to be transparent, got to be honest. Of course, we're here in Fort Worth. I was really hoping to see that TCU, that they would be in that national title game. It's kind of tough to swallow for some of those Frog fans out here.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame TCU at all. And again, I think of a team like TCU as a kind of kindred spirit out there where, you know, they're not traditionally one of the big boys. But, you know, they really ought to be proud of what they'd have accomplished. And they're going to have a chance still to prove themselves, not in the title game. But I was a little disappointed, though, to see TCU moving to the Big East Conference. I was hoping that they would actually move to the Big 12. I thought that would have been a better fit. And I thought it would have been fun in the years coming, you know, since Nebraska is not going to be in the Big 12. It would have been fun to see like an annual Texas-TCU matchup or Texas A&M-TCU. It is good for the Horned Frogs that they'll be in a BCS conference now. So, you know, if they go 12-0 in the future or win their conference in the future, they can be guaranteed of a BCS matchup. But it's a little funny to imagine TCU playing Syracuse and West Virginia.
Well, we'll just invite you back on and we'll have a longer discussion in regards to that. Brian, thank you so much and good luck with your Ducks. And we'll catch up with you again real soon.
Thanks so much for having me.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Jason Peter with our Under the Helmet segment will be joining us here in just a moment.